Today's the 19th of May, 2017. Another in series of interviews we've been conducting for people connected in one way or another to the Western Dubuque School District. Today I'm visiting with Dennis Garrity. And Dennis has been the head basketball coach at Western Dubuque High School. How about, was it 4 years?
9 years.
9 years.
Getting ready for my 10th.
Amazing. We wanted to maybe just start a little bit, Dennis, with can you give us some of your background as far as, let's go back maybe to your early beginnings as a youngster, grade school, forward from there.
Okay, we'll go back to about my sixth grade year. I went to a Catholic school after transferring from a public school in New York City. My mother transferred me to a Catholic school because she thought my first 3 years of public education were so bad and I needed more discipline. She sent me to a Polish Catholic high school, a grade school on Staten Island called St. Adalbert's. They had Polish nuns, Polish pastor, and I can remember vividly in the third grade transferring, and on a Friday I went and met my teacher, Sister Mary Matilda, and she gave me this packet and said, know all these prayers by Monday. Well, I knew all my prayers, so I didn't look at the packet until Sunday night. I'm going to be my first day the next day on Monday. I happen to open the packet and I panicked. I called my mother and I said, Mom, look at these prayers. They were all in Polish. So we stayed up for hours and hours, but I did not get the prayers memorized. So my initial day at St. Adalbert's, we stood up at 8 o'clock and said our prayers, and I was standing there with my hands without saying a word. Sister Mary Matilda came by with a great big ruler out of her black dress that she was wearing, slapped me in the hands, and said, I told you to know these prayers. If you don't know them by tomorrow, don't come back to school. So needless to say, I learned the Hail Mary, the Our Father, and the other prayers in one night in Polish.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah. There were many, many days that I got hit by the ruler from Sister Mary Matilda. But anyway, going to my sixth grade, all my friends were at PS 44, where I started my education, but now I was at St. Adalbert's. And they played on an after-school team, and I would run from St. Adalbert's every day to watch them practice their basketball. It was either sixth or seventh grade. And Mr. Quinn was the coach of the sixth or seventh grade team, and he saw me sitting on the chair on the bleachers for about 2 weeks, because my two friends, Bob and Ralph, were on this team, and I had my own basketball, but I never got to practice with them. So he finally came over to me one day, and he said, how come you're not out here practicing with us? I said, I don't go to PS 44 anymore. I go to St. Adalbert's. They don't have a team. They don't have any kind of basketball. But, you know, Bob and Ralph are my friends. And he said, well, from now on, when you come back, wear your shorts and a T-shirt. You don't have to bring your own ball. You can practice with our team. He said, you can't play in the games, but we'll let you practice. So for 2 years, I practiced with PS 44, never got to play in a game. Sister Mary Matilda, who was my first teacher, found out about this, and she always saw me out on the playground shooting baskets while the other kids were doing things. She let me bring my basketball to class as long as I left it in the back of the room. And I found out years later she had called Mr. Quinn, the coach at PS 44, to tell him about my passion for basketball. And it was probably because of her, the nun who beat me with the ruler, that Mr. Quinn let me practice with the team for 2 years. So, you know, it's funny how things worked out for me, but Bob and Ralph, my two best friends, you know, I would go to their games and watch them, and it was illegal for me to play in the games, but Mr. Quinn was actually my first organized coach.
How many games did they play?
They would probably play about 15 games, 7th and 8th grade games, And it was fun to go watch them. I couldn't sit on the bench. I sat behind the bench. But at least practicing with them every day helped me really continue with my passion for basketball. And I remember one night Mr. Quinn told us that if you really have a love or a passion for this game, I don't believe he used the word passion, but a love for this game, you'll never go any place without your basketball. And I never did. In the 7th grade, 8th grade, throughout high school, I never got on a public bus. I went to church and left my basketball in back of the church. I got a new basketball every Christmas as a Christmas present, and it took me 1 year to wear it out on the playground courts. Skin the ball, and so every Christmas I would have a new basketball. But anyway, getting ready to go to high school, I went and tried out for the two Catholic schools, St. Peter's and Monsignor Farrell, and they actually gave basketball scholarships. I didn't get a scholarship, so I wound up going to the public school, Port Richmond High School. And I tell all my players this story, and I don't know if they believe me or not, but I tried out for the JV basketball team as a freshman. There might have been 100 of us trying out, and the coaches told us, this is how we do our practices and our tryouts. If you get a pat on the back, we want you to leave practice. We're not going to go into any long discussions, but if you get a pat on the back in the drill, please leave. You're cut that day. Well, I got cut in the first drill of the first day of practice my freshman year, and I had really practiced hard as a 7th grader, 8th grader. We were doing some kind of a layup drill. Maybe the way I looked, I was a very skinny kid, couldn't jump. I could shoot it, but I got pat on my shoulder, and I looked, and coach went like that, so I left. And I played CYO ball instead of high school ball. CYO is Catholic Youth Organization, and every parish has an organized team for those players who aren't playing in high school. So I played for St. Michael's. Father Clement was our coach, and I told him the coaches at Port Richmond were very unreasonable. I didn't even get to practice the whole first day. So he said, well, you have to work harder. And that's exactly what my parents told me. I guess you're not good enough because you haven't worked harder. Unlike some parents today who might have gone up to the school, that wasn't my dad. My dad said, you better work harder. Well, second year, sophomore year, now I'm trying out for the same JV team. Back in our high school, we had 800 in our class. So freshmen and sophomores usually play JV. Juniors and seniors usually tried out for varsity, but some juniors also tried out for the JV. Second year, my sophomore year, I made it through the first day of practice, and on the second day of practice, I got patted on the back. Only I didn't leave so easily. I told the coach, you're not giving me a fair chance. I'm as good as anybody in the gym here. And he said, we're not going to argue about it. You have to leave. So I left the second day. And that was a real turning point in my basketball career. I almost went with a lot of my other friends who said high school ball isn't worth it. I played CYO ball again. And we won the Staten Island Championship. We played in the New York City Championship and lost in the second round. And I was averaging about 30 points a game on this team. Well, finally, the high school coaches found out about me. And I can remember walking the hall, and the high school coach said, we're anxious to have you try out for the team next year. Long story short, I made the JV team as a junior. The middle of the year, they moved me up to the varsity. My first varsity game, I scored 17 points. And by the time I was a senior, I made second team all New York City. I had about 25 scholarship offers. I averaged 30 points a game. And it led me to going to college for free. So I just persevered. I mean, I always prided myself in working harder than anybody. When I tell my players that my junior and senior year in high school, I spent 10 or 12 hours a day on the project courts. I'm not exaggerating. That's all I did for 12 hours a day. And it helped me get lots of scholarship offers.
So, okay. In those days, as a grade schooler, and I'm reflecting on my own experience, I never had anybody say, this is the way to dribble a ball or shoot a basketball.
No. Same here. We never had parents around. We were on the projects by ourselves. I never had any instruction other than when I made... Well, Father Clement on that grade school team, he was a priest who coached us, but, I mean, we just played. I got my first instruction from Mr. Matthews, who was my favorite all-time coach, my JV coach. I got my first instruction on how to do things as a junior in high school.
Yeah.
But there weren't clinics or camps, and if there were, we couldn't afford it. I lived in the project. We moved to the projects my freshman year when my father was assaulted and almost killed, and he was in the vet's hospital for 6 months. We had to move out of the little house into the government subsidy projects, which were pretty tough, but every projects had a court down in the middle of all the buildings, and that's where I spent my 10 or 12 hours every day without any instruction. I just shot so much I became a really good shooter.
You know, and you went from the public school to the parochial school. My experience, I did the opposite. I started out like I was a farm kid in a one-room school, and my parents sent me to a parochial school for high school. And I got to tell you, it was I was a dead ender with a bunch of guys that didn't have any direction. Fortunately, my parents bought a farm about 20 miles away. We moved there as I was a sophomore, and. This is a German farming community with strict attitudes toward education. And when I went to the public school, wow, I had to shape up in a hurry. That's where I met Jim Borgerding.
And see, mine was just the opposite. My grade school, the nuns were so strict. I can honestly say I didn't have to study in high school for my first 2 years, because everything I had as a freshman and sophomore at Port Richmond High School, the public school, I had in the 7th and 8th grade at St. Adalbert's. We were so lucky to get such a disciplined education in that Catholic grade school that I didn't have to bring a book home for 2 years.
Yeah.
I had such a good background. And the public school was off the wall compared to... So I'm the opposite.
So now you're graduating from high school. Pick it up from there.
I could have gone to the University of South Carolina, University of Connecticut. I chose Long Island University because one of the guys, after my senior year of high school, I played for Howard Garfinkel, famous New York scout.
I know the name.
Howard Garfinkel had the New York Nationals. He chose guys off the first, second, and third all New York City team, and we had 10 guys who traveled the East Coast with him. And from playing high school ball, averaging 30 points a game, and playing on his New York national team, the scholarship offers just came in like crazy. Well, one of the guys that I played on the New York Nationals with from Brooklyn was a black kid named Larry Newbold, and he and I became very good friends. So we decided to go to Long Island University, LIU, together. I went to LIU, and after a semester, my father was doing a lot worse after he was assaulted and almost killed. He never left our apartment. I needed to drop out of school to help my mom, so I dropped out after a semester at LIU and I went to work at the New York Stock Exchange to help my mom. And after that semester, I just had to get away from the dysfunctional family that we had. It was really a bad situation. And I told my mom, I said, you know, I have to go back to college. I'm not going back to LIU. They won't have me. I'm going to call Howard Garfinkel and ask him what I should do. So I called him, and he said, Dennis, you know, you dropped out of LIU. You did get a semester of credits. But he said, I really can't call any of those four-year schools because you're going to have to sit out a year. And he said, I would suggest you let me find you a JUCO. I said, okay. And this was like towards the end of August. I worked from February through the end of August, and that's when I said to my mom, I'm going to college somewhere. I don't know where, but Howard will find me someplace. So I called him up, and he said, let me make a few calls. So he called me in about 2 days, And he said, I got five JUCOs who will take you sight unseen based on what I told them. And you can play right away, and then you can go to a four-year school for two more years. So I said, give me the names of them. So he did. There were two in Florida, one in California, one in Kansas, and one in Iowa. So I sat down with my mom. I said, these five places will give me a full ride. All I have to do is get there. She eliminated the one in Florida and the two in California. She said, based on what I know about Florida and California, you'll never go to class. She said, let's cross those three out. You're going to go to try to get an education and move on to a four-year school. So she says, pick this one in Kansas or Iowa. I believe it was, I don't know if it was Hutchison or whatever, and it was Ellsworth. We flipped a coin. I said, heads, Mom, I'm going to Kansas. And people don't believe this, but we did. I mean, back then you couldn't research these things. So I flipped a coin. Ellsworth came up. So I called Howard Garfinkel up and I said, Howard, I think it's going to be this Ellsworth Junior College in Iowa. What can you tell me about it? He said, they have a great coach named Jim Carey. He has a good program. He's got a guy from Brooklyn there, Willie Walker. He needs a shooting guard really bad, and you'll be a perfect fit for him. I said, well, that's where I'm going. And he says, well, they've started classes last week, so you've got to be there tomorrow. So my mom called her sister and her brother, and they got enough money to get me a one-way airline ticket because we didn't have the money.
Right.
I called him back and I said, I'm leaving in the morning. And my aunt, who had a little bit of money, I think she might have given me $25. So I got on that plane. Somebody drove me to JFK Airport. I had a one-way ticket to Waterloo, flew into Waterloo. I was at Ellsworth that next day.
How'd you get to Ellsworth from Waterloo?
Two guys picked me up in a car at the airport.
Okay.
We're driving along Highway 20, and I'm seeing land, and you know, and these guys said, probably the first time you've ever seen farms? They said, yeah. I said, in fact, that's the first time I've ever seen a cow in person. The guys screeched the car to a stop, turned around. Honest to God, this happened. He pulled up into the farmer's lot. The farmer was standing there. They said, get out of the car. So the farmer sees one big black guy, Willie Walker, and another white guy, and me. And the farmer says, what can I do for you? And these two guys are laughing their asses off, saying, we just wanted to let Dennis see the first cow he's ever seen. The farmer says, I don't have any cows. These are sows.
Oh, my God.
Honestly.
Okay.
So that was my first day of Iowa. And they took me to meet Coach Carey.
You guys are having fun with you.
Were they ever? Yeah.
Wow, that's
and,
great.
And Coach Carey was a real hard disciplinarian, and I was a cocky New Yorker. One other Ellsworth story, about 2 o'clock in the morning, I lived with Willie and 3 or 4 football players. So Willie and I shared a bedroom upstairs from the people who owned the house. And about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, Willie says, Dennis, I can't sleep. Are you sleeping? And I said, well, I was trying to. He says, let's go get a burger. Now it's about 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning in Iowa Falls. So we have to walk downtown. And as we get down there, Willie says, everything is closed. At 2:30 in the morning. Everything is closed. Now there's 6'6 Willie Walker and me walking back to our house, and a cop car comes by and rolls down his window and he says, what are you two guys up to? And I said something smart. I said, we come down here to get something to eat and the damn town is closed up. He jumped out of the car, basically threw me up against the car because I had a wise ass mouth. And he says, don't you ever pop off like that to me again. And I never want to see you two walking the streets at 2 o'clock in the morning. That was my third day in Iowa.
Okay. Okay, so you were one season?
Okay, so I got recruited by Drake, Iowa State, a lot of places. And for some reason, they all kept telling me, you know, you're going to have to be a lot better. I averaged, Sam Williams was the leading scorer in the state who went from Burlington to Iowa, and I was the second leading scorer. I averaged about 26 a game, but Maury John and all these places that recruited me said, if you learn how to play a lot better defense, you'll probably help us. Well, there was a place that Willie Walker was going to go to in Texas. I said, I'm going to go with you, Willie, to Hardin-Simmons in Texas. So I went home for the summer. I can't remember what, I think I worked in the parks and recreation. Flew to Hardin-Simmons in August and was there one day, and it was nothing but a basketball factory. It was just, the coach wasn't too concerned about enrolling for classes. Classes were going to start in about a week, but he said, you'll just go over to the gym and that's where we're going to meet. And I could tell that this wasn't really what I thought it was going to be. My friend Willie was there, but so I called Bob Duax, who recruited the only small college in Iowa who thought they had a chance to get me was St. Ambrose. They were NAIA, and they offered a full ride. I had turned that down. I called Bob Duax, and I said, you know, I'm at Hardin-Simmons. I just got here. I'm broke. Does that scholarship still stand that you offered me back? And he says, I'm no longer the coach. I had a heart attack this summer. My assistant took over, Leo Kilfoy, and he'll be in his first year, and he recruited you, and I'm sure there's a scholarship still available for you. He said, let me have him call you. And I said, well, I don't even know my phone number. And I said, I'll call back in an hour or so, but I said, I got to get out of here. So I called back. Leo was on the phone. He said, Dennis, we do have a scholarship for you. We wanted you so bad. And he said, you will be in our program and fit us perfectly. I said, well, I don't have a penny. I don't have any money. And I honestly don't. I think I might have had a dollar or two in my pocket. And he said, I will Western Union you the money to get a flight to fly into Chicago and then to wherever, Davin, well, maybe he picked me up in Chicago. I can't even remember. I think he did fly to Chicago and pick me up. So Leo Kilfoy is like my father today. He's going to be the coach, and after they got the transcripts and everything, I was three credits short from actually being a sophomore. So he said, I got bad news for you. He said, we'll have the scholarship, but you have to sit out the first semester. You'll be eligible in January, and I think I'll be able to get you two more years of eligibility because I played a half a year at LIU. I played a year at St. Ambrose. Because they were NAIA, I wound up playing the second semester and two more years.
Okay.
But Leo Kilfoy got me the full ride. They had all the rooms in the dorms were filled except for the rooms above the old field house where all the priests-to-be were rooming. So I roomed with all the guys who were studying to be priests at Ambrose, cocky New York kid, and all these priests. And that's how I got to Ambrose. And I became eligible in January, moved right into the starting lineup, and my junior and senior year at Ambrose, I was the leading scorer in the state for all the small colleges.
Okay.
My senior year, I don't know if you remember this, they used to have the Iowa University versus the small college all-star game. They played it in Cedar Rapids. John Davison and Ken Fenanger from Luther coached that team. Well, I made that team and got the MVP award of that game over Willie McCarter and his Drake buddies. It's the only time the small colleges ever beat the University Stars.
Okay.
I made my first 10 shots, or 9 out of 10 shots. I scored 26 points. And when they called the MVP out, it wasn't Willie McCarter, it was me.
Okay.
Yeah?
So, now you're looking for a job.
in March of my senior year, again, going back to Coach Kilfoy, he was a father to me for 2.5 years. He was not only my advisor, he was the head of, not the head of the PE department, but he was a professor. Way back when I entered there, he said, "Now, you want, I know you want to be a physical education major. What else do you want to do?" And I said, "Well, but that's all I want to teach." And he said, "Well, that's not going to be good enough. You have to have another major. And since you're going to have 4.5 years in college, you should be able to be a double major. What are you good at? Science, man." I said, "No. You got to be good at something besides phys ed." I said, "Well, I wrote for the high school newspaper, and I'm a pretty good writer." He said, "Good, you'll be an English major too." So I was a double major, phys ed and English. Thanks to his guidance, in March of my senior year, when I was sending out all these resumes, I put that double major down, major in physical education, major in English. And within 2 weeks after looking at the Des Moines Register for all these jobs, I get a call from Preston. Preston needs a phys ed, an English teacher, and a head basketball coach. I interview there. I get the job. They were terrible. They hadn't had a winning season in 5 or 6 years. But I sign a contract to be phys ed teacher, English teacher, head basketball, assistant football. I didn't know one thing about football, and athletic director. For $7,200 in 1969. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks after I signed the contract, another place calls me, Ackley Geneva. They had been really good. They want to interview me. So I go into Coach Kilfoy and I said, "Coach, I got a way better high school that wants to interview me. Ackley Geneva up near the Waterloo area, wherever it is. They want to interview me for just a phys ed and a head basketball job." He said, "Did you sign your contract?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Then you're not interviewing at Ackley. You're not going to break your first contract you've ever signed. It wouldn't be fair, and that word will get out. You tell Ackley you're not interested." I said, "Coach, it's a way better job. They won 18 games last year. Preston won 4. He said, "You're not breaking your contract." So I had to tell Ackley I wasn't interested. So I went to Preston. I think we were 11-10 my first year. We were 18-5 my second year. And Comanche beat us in the sub-state to go to state. Okay. And so then I left Preston to go. I signed a contract to go coach Springville. You remember Al Eberhardt?
Yeah, I coached against him.
Okay, I got offered the... Paul Jones was the superintendent at Springville, and he lured me away from Preston, and the only way he lured me away, he said, "We are going to have an unbelievable team for the next couple of years." And I said, "If they're so good, I would like to come up." This was like in March after my second year at Preston. I hadn't signed my Preston contract or anything. I said, "If they're going to be so good, let me come up for a week at night and put on a basketball clinic for your kids, and I want to see how good they're going to be." Well, that was probably illegal as hell. Basically, I wanted to see how good these kids were. This was at Springville. So Denny Helms, the coach at Delwood of Elwood, good friend of Bill Fleming, Denny Helms and I went up for a week, and I couldn't. I was going to be a team teacher in English. No PE, but I was going to team teach with another English teacher, and I was going to be their head basketball coach. I went back to Preston, and I said, "I'm leaving. I'm going to take this job at Springville." So I went back to Springville, and I said, "I will sign my contract with you, but I've interviewed for one other job, and I'm probably not going to get it. But if I get it, I want out of this contract." So I told Preston, "I'm finished." I signed my contract at Springville, and 1 week later, North Dakota State called me. I had interviewed for the assistant job there, and I told, "That's the only job. Yeah. I'm not gonna lie to you. If North Dakota State calls and offers me this full-time assistant basketball job that I interviewed for, and I know they interviewed 5 of us, but I don't think I'm gonna get the job." Well, they called me and said, "Would you like to be our assistant basketball coach? Charge of recruiting." I went into Paul Jones and I said, I'm not going to believe this is, but 1 or 2 weeks after I was announced as the head coach, I got the job at North Dakota State. He said, God damn it, you told me you didn't think you were going to get it. I said, I didn't, but they offered it to me. So I got out of my contract. I went up to North Dakota State for 2 years.
Okay.
Second year at North Dakota State, the head coach gets fired.
Who's that?
Bud Belk. When the head coach gets fired, so is the assistant. So now I'm looking for a job right after the basketball season. And I'm looking in the papers, and there's no jobs open in Iowa. There's this job open in Columbus, Nebraska. So I call them up, Columbus Lakeview, Class B school. I explained the situation. I said, I'm out of a job here at North Dakota State. The head coach got fired, and I don't really want to stay in Nebraska. Well, I mean, I don't want to stay at North Dakota State. Excuse me. I mean, in North Dakota. So they said, the superintendent said, well, send our stuff. So I did. He calls me up and he says, come on for an interview. So I go all the way from Fargo, North Dakota to Columbus, Nebraska. Luckily, they offer me the job on the spot, teaching PE, head basketball. Go back to Fargo, pack my little stuff that I have, and I'm now the coach at Columbus Lakeview. The famous guy that I coached is now one of the richest farmers in Nebraska. He made the Sports Illustrated cover for football. His name was Jim Pillen. He had a hit against Alabama that made that cover in one of the bowl games. He played basketball for me, and I can show you what he wrote about me in terms of pushing him as a basketball player.
Yes, I read it.
Oh, yeah, Jim Pillen. Okay, so anyway, and now he's the largest hog farmer in Nebraska. He went and became a veterinarian, sold his veterinarian practice, largest pork producer in the Midwest, Jim Pillen, and he played for me, and I was there for 4 years. I tell everybody the best thing about that job in Nebraska is I met Julie.
Okay.
She was a first-year teacher at Lakeview, and I was a first-year coach.
Spotted her in the hallway.
Oh, gosh. I couldn't get my eyes off her. And I had to lure her away from a boyfriend, which took me a year to do. But, yeah.
Okay.
So, spent 4 years there. Best thing was Julie. I had two really good years and two so-so years. I said, we've got to get out of this state because it's so football crazy. Basketball was just secondary in Nebraska. And started interviewing for places in Iowa. I interviewed for the Dubuque senior job. After 3 years there, Merle Hyde got it instead of me. I interviewed for the job at Parkersburg. And I'm teaching a PE class. This is my fourth year now. I already resigned at Lakeview without a job. I told them I'm not coming back. Julie thought I was crazy, but so interviewed for this job at Parkersburg. I'm teaching PE class, and all of a sudden I see the two principals, the high school principal and the elementary principal, coming into the parking lot. I'm out on the field. I think we were playing softball, and here's the two guys that I interviewed with. So I walked over to them and I said, you come all the way from Parkersburg to Columbus, Nebraska today? And they said, well, we're thinking about offering you the job, but we wanted to come here, watch you teach a class. We want to talk to your administrators. Then we're going downtown and talking to some people about you. Do you have any objections on that? I said, no. Bob Conway was the principal at the high school, and I can't remember the elementary principal, but it was elementary and high school PE. I said, no. If that's what it's going to take, fine. So they spent the whole day. They watched me teach this PE class. I had a student teacher. They went in to talk to my principal. They talked to other teachers. They went down to the McDonald's. Do you know Dennis Garrity? Yeah. Tell us about him. I mean, that's pretty good homework.
Yeah.
They came to my house at 3:30 in the afternoon, sat down with Julie and me, and they said, well, you're ready to move. The job's yours if you want. And I said, yeah, we're ready to move. So we packed our bags. I taught at Parkersburg. Julie got one of the best jobs she's ever had. She got the job at Cedar Falls High School as a business teacher.
Okay.
Spent 2 years at Parkersburg. I gave her the bad news that I'm leaving Parkersburg. I got the job at Creston. And she said, and I don't have a job, and I'm going to give up my Cedar Falls job so we can move from Parkersburg to Creston. I said, it's a 1A job to a 2A job, and I need to make this move for my professional advancement. She said, okay. So she gave up her job at Cedar Falls High School. I took the job at Creston, and they didn't have any business jobs. They helped her get the worst job she's ever had, and she's never forgiven. She taught at Orient Maxburg,
okay,
outside of Creston. And she never has forgiven me for leaving Cedar Falls High School to teach at Orient Maxburg. We were in Creston for 1 year, and that's when our son, at 3 years old, was diagnosed with a rare brain disease in Omaha Children's Hospital, tuberous sclerosis. And so the AD at Creston, when he hired me, he said, my son is going to play for you for 2 years, right? Bill Nielsen used to be the great football coach at Indianola. He was the AD at Creston. He said, I'm going to hire you. We're going to hire you if my son will play for you for 2 years. And I said, no doubt about it. Well, after his junior year, this is when Nate had to diagnose, I had to go in and tell him, if I get a chance to leave, I have to leave. And he said, well, you better get a really good job because I will not. You told me Todd would play for 2 years. And we had a really good year that first year in Creston. I interviewed for the Hempstead job, got it. I go into his office and I said, Bill, I got bad news for you. I said, I can go to Hempstead for about a $6,000 raise, and Nate's going to be by a better hospital complex. Every time Nate has problems, we have to run to Omaha, and Dubuque's got a pretty good hospital situation, and Iowa City's even better, so you need to let me leave Creston here. And he said, Dennis, I will reluctantly let you leave, but it really breaks my heart that you're going to leave us. And he said, when you tell Todd and the boys that you're not coming back, that's going to be pretty hard for you, but you're going to tell them. So I did. And Bill Nielsen is one of my best friends today. He left Creston, became a born-again person, is now a pastor in a church in Alabama.
Is that right?
Yeah. So that's how I got the Hempstead job, because I had originally interviewed for the Buick senior job 2 years earlier. Harold Sweet knew me, and he was still going to be doing the main hiring. Hempstead job opened up when Jim Broussard left to go to Ames. I took the Hempstead job.
Is that about the time that Harold was... When did he resign?
This was 1980, so Harold Sweet was still...
Yeah, I know, but...
A couple years later. Babe Derwin was the athletic director at Hempstead. Don Moody was the principal. Yeah. And I interviewed... I came back for the second interview, and that's when Harold Sweet... They were all involved. And so that took two interviews to get that job, but... Actually, I beat out Wayne Chanley for that job, who then came the senior a couple years later.
Okay.
Yeah. But English got me that job, not PE. There was no PE teaching.
Yeah.
So way back to Leo telling me English will help you get jobs, that's all I taught at Hempstead for all those years was sophomore English.
Okay. See, I went to Loras when Wayne was there.
Okay. So you went to Loras. Maybe you saw me play at Ambrose. I played at Ambrose
in
66 through 69.
Well, no, I was out there before that.
Okay.
But, let's see, I go back a little bit. I started out, I needed a job. I graduated at Loras at Student Todd, and I got a call that this priest wanted to somebody, and so I went up there, and this priest, his father, Jaroslav Ruzacek. And he was from Protivin, Iowa, up in Cresco. And he needed a coach and teacher. And I needed a job, so I went up there with my folks. And as a tiny town, Czech community. And so I had no other prospects, so I signed a contract for $3,700. coaching and teaching. And,
oh, yeah.
And at the end of the year, I went to see Father. He says, I think I can have you sign another contract for a $100 raise.
So, oh, boy.
So I stayed another year.
Yeah.
But at any rate, so then I left. I went to Bellevue Marquette.
Okay.
For 1 year, I didn't get along with the pastor, and then that's how I came to Farley. And I spent 6 years at Farley, and I got my master's at Loras in the meantime, counseling. And so after the sixth year with a master's, I thought I should get a raise. I was informed that I wasn't going to get anything. And at that point, West Dubuque was opening up a short time situation with Dyersville. And Wayne Drexler, I called him, I said, I need a job. And he said, well, would you like to be a principal?
Wow.
And I had no degree, but he said, well, we can work that out.
Holy cow.
So that's how I got started with West Dubuque over in Dyersville. I spent about 5 years there, and then I went to the middle school with Tom Wickham. And I just wanted to wind up at the high school.
Sure.
So when Buck left, I went over there with Knutson and started as assistant and AD.
Yeah.
So that's how I got involved with Babe.
Sure.
And those guys in Dubuque.
Well, it's funny how things worked out at Hempstead, because once I got that Hempstead job, again, Julie was delighted to leave Orient Maxburg without a job and come here. But we had to come because of Nate anyway. But she subbed for a semester at Western Dubuque.
I had her.
And then she subbed at Senior.
Okay.
And then the next year, a business job opened at Senior, and she got it.
Okay.
So she informed me after she got that Senior job. She says, now I want to tell you this. You might as well not apply for any more coaching jobs, because I'm not leaving Dubuque. I've got a great job at Senior now. We've got a great situation for Nate. We take him to Iowa City or Mayo Clinic for the one of the specialists in the world for tuberous sclerosis was at Mayo Clinic, that we went every year and saw Dr. Gomez. She says, we're not leaving for your whims of another coaching job, just so you know. Well, after 2 or 3 years, I told her, Julie, I got a terrible coaching job. I can't win here at Hempstead because of Waller. I just can't win. She says, it doesn't matter. You got a really good teaching job. And I did. I loved my teaching job. I taught 5 sophomore English classes. Great literature. I felt comfortable with that. Well, I got antsy. I kept saying, you know, I can remember Mason City opened or whatever. She said, well, you're going alone. We're not leaving. You know, you've got a good job. So that's how things transpired after coaching for 13 years at Hempstead and realizing we were 17-5 1 year. Still the best record Hempstead's ever had. But at Hempstead, 11-10 was a good record. And we weren't winning championships because Walnut had such an advantage. They could recruit anybody. I finally decided, you know what? I can't do it anymore at Hempstead. It was just wearing me out. So I resigned my basketball, but not my tea. I went into Don Moody and I said, Don, this is not what I expected. And he said, well, I told you when I hired you, this was a tough job. You know, Wallach does have that advantage. And I said, I talked to the Loras coach, and I'm just gonna give up my basketball here and be an assistant at Loras.
Yeah.
Well, needless to say, I wasn't a very good assistant. I'm a head coach. I tried to be an assistant for a year over there. How things work out after my year at helping John Lembeziter at Loras, I get a call from the superintendent out at West Delaware, who was on my coaching staff at Creston. Joe Kirchhoff was my freshman coach at Creston. He's now been the superintendent at West Delaware for 3 years. He calls me up and he says, my daughter told me you went up to her and said hi at a golf meet. I said, yeah, the name Kirchhoff isn't a common name. So I went over to this gal and said, what are you doing golfing for Manchester? Is your dad Joe Kirchhoff by any chance? And she said, yeah, he's the superintendent of schools. I said, well, say hi to him.
That's all.
He calls me up and says, not only am I calling you to say hi, I need a basketball coach. This was in May. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, our basketball coach resigned, Rick Luke, I think it was the coach. And he said, we hired this guy from clear across the state at Mount, the guy who coached Jess Settles. And he said, they lost a child. They have the child buried there, and the wife told him, we're not going across the state. I want to be where near our child. So this guy wants out of this contract here. I said, so we let him out of the contract, and I do not want to hire the guy who's here who wants the job. How would you like to come? I said, well, Joe, first of all, I can't move. My wife's not going to move from Dubuque. Second of all, you can't match my teaching salary that I'm making at Hempstead. He said, all I want you to do, would you consider driving the 30 miles and coach for 1 year, because I have no teaching openings anyway. And then next year I'll advertise it and you can be out of the contract. Come and coach for us for a year. I said, I'll come and interview. So I went and interviewed with Bob Murphy, Joe Kirchhoff. They're trying to convince me to come to their place. So I said, well, listen, we're going on a week's vacation to Birmingham, Alabama. Bill Nielsen, my former AD at Creston, is now living in Birmingham. Give me a week to think about this. I go to Birmingham. I'm sitting by their pool. And I said, Bill, let me explain this situation. I said, you know, I gave up the Hempstead job. And he said, yeah. And he said, I don't see you as an assistant coach. And I said, I'm really just kind of a water boy over there at Loras. I said, I'm not real happy there, but this job at West Delaware is a terrible job. They were 1-20 last year, and they were 2-19 the year before. And he said, Dennis, I know you as a high school head coach, and I think you'd be happier doing that than going back to Loras. He says, what does Loras pay? I said, nothing. He said, what does this job at Manchester pay? I said, oh, about $4,000. He said, that'll pay for your travel back and forth. That's about all it'll pay for. And I said, well, if I didn't think that we were going to be 1-20, I might take the job. They already told me that we're going to be terrible, and they just want me to do it for a year. So he says, well, so for a week, 5 days we were actually there, and he just kept telling me, you need to do this. So in the process of that 5 days, I get a couple of calls from community people in Manchester, and one of them was Gary Grimm. And Gary Grimm says, listen, I played against you in college. I was at UD when you played at Ambrose. He said, I got two kids coming up in the program. And he said, I was partly responsible for getting the other coach. No, Rick Luke wasn't the coach. There was another guy after Rick. He said, I was partly responsible for getting that guy fired. Salo and I and a few others went and said, if this guy's coaching, our kids are going to Mack Valley. He said, my two sons and Adam Salo and Todd Klosterman, and he named about six people, next week they're going to be at the Platteville camp. And when you come back from Alabama, at least go over to Platteville and watch these kids. They're all going to be eighth and ninth graders at Manchester next year. So I called Bob Murphy up and I said, Bob, I will let you know next Tuesday if I'll take the job. Is that fair? And he says, yeah, Joe and I need to know. He said, come over and we'll talk to you one more time. I said, no, I'll let you know next Tuesday. So I get home on Friday from Alabama. I go over to Platteville. Saturday is their last day of their camp. I walk in and Bo says to me, what are you doing here? I said, well, I've been offered a job in Iowa, and I hear there's a bunch of kids here from the school, and I want to see if they're as good as everybody's telling me. He said, well, I hope the school is West Delaware.
Okay.
I said, it is. He said, those kids in the 8th and 9th grade division will get every award tonight. Unbelievable talent, Dennis. Go down there and watch them. So I watched Todd Klosterman, Brian Hart, Nolan Grimm, Brandon Grimm. I watched 7 of these kids. Unbelievable.
Timing is everything.
But that's timing is everything. But that's not going to help me as the varsity coach because they're all really young kids. So I called Bob Murphy up and I said, Bob, I'll be over tomorrow morning, Tuesday morning. He said, Joe and I anxious to talk to you. So I go over there. I said, I saw these kids play at the Platteville camp, and you weren't kidding. Are they going to be good? But they're all going to be 8th and 9th graders. I said, a couple of them might be good enough to play. If they're as bad as the varsity is as bad as you tell me, they might be as good enough to play as freshmen. I said, I'll take the job with 3 stipulations. Number one, I get to fire all the coaches who want the job if I don't think they're going to be loyal to me. Because 2 of them on staff wanted the job, the sophomore coach and the assistant. Number 2, I get to have the camp that's coming up at the end of June. And number 3, I will not travel with the team. I want to travel with my family, and I'm not going to drive to Manchester, get on a bus. I said, I have a wife and daughter who I want to travel to the games with. I said, those are my 3 stipulations. I said, well, we'll let you do number 1. If you're not happy with the coaches after you meet them, if you can find another coach and staff, fine. We're not sure about number 2 because the sophomore coach has run this camp for the last 5 years and he's already got everybody signed up, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know if we can let you have that camp. And number 3, you don't have to ride the bus. I said, well, I have to have the camp. So I'm going to go home, and if you tell me I can have the camp in 3 weeks, and it's my camp, they call me back and they said, well, if you don't want the sophomore coach around, you have to give him $1,000 because he's got 75 kids signed up for this camp. You give him $1,000 for all the stuff he's done for the camp.
Time and effort, yeah.
You can have the camp. We'll tell him to stay away. And then when you start coming, you have to tell us about the coaches. I said, fine. All 3 stipulations, you got yourself a coach. So the first night I go over there, the sophomore coach comes up to me and says, well, I need to let you know so-and-so should have got this head job, and I'll stay on the staff if you want me. I said, I don't want you. If that's how you feel, you're finished. And I'll talk to so-and-so. He said, fine. So Hutton was the sophomore coach. I don't know if you know, a long time. He's still over there, and he's a good basketball guy, but with that attitude, there was going to be no loyalty from him. He got his $1,000, but he was finished on my staff. They happen to have Corey Coates coming in. Hi, Mike.
Hey, you out here to play golf?
No, I'm out here for an interview.
Oh.
No, I'm not out here for golf.